Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, offering new and used vehicles to help Mainers explore the beauty of their home state. Learn more at leeauto.com.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Maine Public's senior political correspondent, Mal Leary, and State House Bureau Chief, Steve Missler. You probably have to go back to the 1960s to find the last time politicians were pushed to act on the issue of racial injustice. Protests that swept the country included several here in Maine. Portland recently reported 2,500 people took part in one of them. Steve Missler, are there signs Maine state legislators are hearing these protests?
Yeah, they're certainly hearing them, Erwin. In fact, lawmakers on the Judiciary and Criminal Justice Committees convened an off-session hearing this week to hear from Public Safety Chief Mike Soschuk and Attorney General Aaron Fry. But for those who have been following this issue over the years, the meeting was a bit of a rehash of issues that have been at the center of several proposals that have failed to gain traction in the legislature. And one of them, I think, really illustrates one of the biggest roadblocks in terms of reform, and that's the issue of racial profiling. We don't have very much data to inform us about how police interact with people of color. We have incarceration rates, and some departments, like local police departments, keep basic data on arrests. But in terms of who is simply being stopped on the streets or just driving, we have nothing. I mean, the only sliver of information we have is this one single complaint that was filed with the AG's Office of Racial Profiling years ago that was dismissed. And that's one single complaint in nearly 30 years. Now, if you're someone that doesn't believe that police are disproportionately targeting people of color, you might point to that one single statistic and say, see, no problem. But if you're a person of color, you might have a very different explanation for that one single complaint. And Representative Craig Hickman, a Democrat from Winthrop and a Black man, certainly did. Here's what he said.
People are not just marching in the streets because of police killings. People are also marching in the streets because they don't believe that law enforcement officers will ever be held accountable for their abuses of power. So it's going to be hard to file a complaint in a system where you're not sure if the complaint itself will make you a target of more aggressive policing in the future because your name is attached to the complaint.
Hickman sponsored a bill last year that would have made police document the ethnicity of the people they pull over in traffic stops, but that provision of the bill was stripped out and replaced with a study to explore options of how to gather that kind of data. Law enforcement agencies were also very opposed to that bill, saying it would be too burdensome, some making the point that racial profiling isn't even a problem. But I think the bigger issue, Erwin, is that the absence of data is the absence of knowledge in this case, and in many other cases too. I mean, these are big policy decisions, and yet there's no data to guide lawmakers' policy decisions. I think that's true in many other issue areas because the state is pretty lousy at gathering and publicizing data in many, many, many policy areas.
Mal, what are the chances the legislature will actually get a chance to tackle this issue before November?
I think that it's pretty slim. The reason being that if they do come back in special session, which continues to be rumored and in which Republicans continue to push for, they've got to deal with basically rewriting part of the state budget to take into account the economic impact of COVID-19. And in many cases, some of the money coming from Washington, from Congress to the state, has to be channeled through the legislative appropriations process. So they're waiting, the governor's waiting, and leadership is waiting for Congress to act, because we've got another bill that's going through being discussed down there called COVID-4, which would include some money directly to the state and to municipalities to help them offset lost revenues. And there would also be some other targeted money that could help offset the economic impact.
You were mentioning the governor. What about Governor Mills? What has she done on this issue of racial injustice since these protests broke out? What could she do on her own?
The governor obviously has some power. She's taken some money from her contingency fund to look at these broader issues. The bottom line is she can't change the law. And a lot of the things that people are advocating for have to be done through a process, either the Administrative Procedures Act, which we've seen from the Criminal Justice Academy, or by actual changes in statutes. And then you get into the issue Steve was talking about, where some lawmakers are saying it's not enough to have the Criminal Justice Academy say that you'll have a policy that you don't use chokeholds. They want it to be an actual crime to use a chokehold. So there's going to be a lot of major policy debates. Folks, we've got an election in November with a new legislature coming into office in December. And with all these other issues swirling around, I think it's going to be very difficult to get legislative leaders and the legislature in general to focus on some major policy areas like this.
Yeah, the one thing I would add about Governor Mills, too, is that while we don't really know where she stands on this particular slate of reforms, and we should add that there's not any official proposals either. You know, in this joint hearing the other day, they were just talking. And they were talking about things that they've talked about many, many times before. But the other thing is to just remember where Janet Mills comes from in this. She is a former prosecutor. And in the past, I think, you know, she has generally aligned herself with law enforcement on these issues. So I don't know if that's coloring her decision-making or views now or not, but it certainly has in the past. She hasn't said a lot about what she wants to see going forward. And I think there are some people that are waiting to hear from her.
Well, policing is normally a state and local function, but Congress has also been urged to act. The House has passed a bill, but Senate Democrats blocked a different Republican proposal, and Republican Senate leaders have made it clear they have little interest in the proposal from the Democratic-controlled House. So, Steve Missler, where are Maine's two U.S. senators on this issue?
Both Senator Angus King and Susan Collins both voted to advance the Republican Senate bill this week, but they had different reasons for doing so. And I think it's important to remember that the vote was basically to allow debate on the GOP bill. It wasn't a vote up or down vote on the bill. And on that front, King was supportive of at least advancing to debate. That's not to say that he believed that the bill itself was a panacea to the problem. He indicated that the proposal should have gone a lot further. And he, the bill had a bunch of provisions that, you know, purportedly improved police training and diversity in law enforcement and penalizing police departments that don't ban chokeholds. It also made lynching a federal crime, which is a pretty astonishing provision because, you know, it's 2020 and lynchings are not a federal crime. I mean, are you kidding me? But anyway, I think the best way to summarize King's position on the bill is that it's better than nothing, but not good enough. Now, Senator Collins took a different tack, which is she took credit for co-sponsoring the lynching provision and establishing a couple of commissions that would have looked at the challenges facing Black men and boys. And she also said that she was really stunned that the Democrats would block the bill. Advocacy groups, where they stood on this too, which is, you know, I'll just cite one for the purpose of discussion, which is the ACLU. They opposed the Republican Senate bill because they basically argued that it threw billions of dollars at studies and commissions to paper over what the organization sees as the real problem, which is Black people dying at the hands of police without consequence. So the ACLU wants to look at a bill that looks at militarization of the police, use of force, racial profiling, and qualified immunity for police officers. So that's where they are. And that's a long, you know, that position is a long way off from where the Senate Republican bill, a little bit closer to where the House Democrats bill was, but neither of those proposals is going forward.
Mal? Well, I think you got the situation of the same kind of political stalemate that we've had on a number of major issues like gun control. And what's going on quite clearly is both parties are using parliamentary procedure to make it look like they're trying to do something, but they're not going to do anything. And I think that's what we're looking at now coming out of Congress. We're seeing this bill come out of the House with lots of press releases from lawmakers talking about how great it is, knowing full well that it's not going to even be taken up in the Senate. And we're seeing more and more of that on these tough issues where you end up with finger pointing over process and completely ignoring the substantive issues. And I think at some point, this is where the public clamor that's been going on with street protests and letter writing and et cetera will start having an impact because in the case of the House, they're all up for re-election come next November.
Yeah, and by the way, just to be complete on this issue too, in the House, both First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, Second District Congressman Jared Golden, both Democrats, both supported the bill that came out of the House. Now, Maine's primary is coming up in July, but the general election is still more than 4 months away. Steve, do you think this movement is going to last long enough to have an impact on the November election?
Yeah, Erwin, I really don't know. You know, on one hand, some of these demonstrations we've seen have been pretty impressive in terms of the number of people in the streets and the energy, and even here in Maine, you know, one of the whitest states in the country. But I do wonder if and how this movement can be sustained, especially if these demonstrators can't force any reforms at either the state and federal level. And we're already seeing some of those efforts stymied. We just talked about two. Or one and potential for two. The question is whether those defeats inspire more demonstrations or instill a sense of resignation and hopelessness. I mean, the other thing to keep in mind about the protests is when they occurred. I mean, they occurred in the middle of a pandemic when many people were already at home, you know, but hey, you know, the way the federal government appears to have given up on the pandemic might mean that they'll still be at home in the fall. I mean, who knows? The one thing I fear if I were a part of this movement is both a withering of enthusiasm and maybe a, you know, just a cheapening of it through commercialization or just online activism, which is just lazy activism in most cases. But I think that that's the last thing the people who care deeply about this issue would like to see happen. I just don't know if it's going to end up there or not. You know, I do know, though, that at the moment, this is an issue that voters care about. There was this massive New York Times poll that showed that President Trump, for example, is in deep trouble if the election were held today. And two of the reasons for that predicament is how he's handling the pandemic and this issue. Voters don't trust him on it. And it's pretty solid majorities. And it's not just nationwide. It's in battleground states.
You get a look to some history here. We've talked about this big demonstration in Portland with 2,500 people. Well, some of us, you're included, have got enough gray to remember some pretty big protests over the Vietnam War. One comes to my mind where the protesters stretched from the University of Maine campus all the way through Orono, across the bridge into town to the local Catholic church. It was estimated at several thousand people. And that was an issue that toppled a president. So what's going to happen here? Who knows? I think we have a dynamic that's underway, that we have more people concerned. We've reached a tipping point. But is it politically going to be a tipping point to get the current Congress to do anything? I think that is a big question mark.
Well, and also it'll depend in part, I suppose, on what other events may happen. There was recently another incident in Tucson, Arizona. And of course, if these things were to continue happening, that will also affect the dynamic.
That's exactly right. You know, in these days too, everybody has a camera or a phone with a camera. And so documenting these things is a lot easier.
Steve Missler and Mal Leary, thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We'll post another edition of the Pulse podcast next Friday afternoon. You can hear most of it on Sunday's weekend edition and an excerpt on Monday's morning edition. Willis Ryder Arnold produces these podcasts, which you can also access via mainepublic.org or wherever you download podcasts. Music is by Rod Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. We'll talk with you again soon.